My name is Gary Butterfield, he, him.
My name is Kay Ross, she, her.
And you're listening to Watch Out for Fireballs. It is a Games Club podcast.
And this week we are talking about RimWorld, which is a colony building sim developed and published by Ludion Studios for PC in 2018.
Next week we're talking about the website, RimWorld, and that one's only for adults.
Yeah.
So don't let kids listen to that episode.
Earmuffs, kids. Remember earmuffs?
Yeah. The earmuffs are still around. Did you say remember earmuffs?
No, because I only ever hear earmuffs in the context of making a joke about the movie Old School, because that's a gag in Old School.
I've never seen old. There's a generation gap difference the two of us, I think, perhaps.
Yeah.
They still exist. This episode was executive produced by Colin. Big thanks and a big fuck you to Colin, because this is gonna like eat a lot of time for me in my future. Like, it's a very depressive game in a non-derogatory sense. It's there for depressions.
Oh, Gwen, if you can put in the "we got one."
We got one!
Yeah, tons of caveats. This is going to be a weird episode.
Yeah.
Setting stakes for everybody. One of the things that I'm interested in finding out from you, as somebody who generally likes these, not just this one, is why other ones? Like, why a varietal of this type of game when you cannot get to the bottom of this game or even nearly the bottom of it?
Okay. Yeah. You just like different subject matter and different systems. Like, this is choosing to simulate a very particular kind of story. There are other ones you can do. Different mechanics. Like, you're never, like, the point of them is not to finish them.
Not to finish them. It feels like the a lot of the qualities of this are agnostic to those things to me.
Okay.
And would transfer over.
Yeah.
Like, almost directly. Like, it's when I, after I played this, and like once I kind of got it, I was looking back on bouncing off of some other stuff, and I was like, I could probably go deep on that, but I don't know why I'd want to, because I'd still got this.
Yeah.
And this has unlimited content because of mods and stuff. Like, I can turn this into whatever I want it to be.
Oh, yeah. No, this is kind of the air example of this. Like, it's this and Dwarf Fortress, which are very, like, very different games, like, subject matter wise, not just sci-fi versus fantasy, but just like what kind of stories it's choosing to simulate, you know?
Yeah.
But like, yeah. No, these could be your everything. Like, this is, you know, when we talk about a forever game, this could be one. Yeah.
For Fernie people. It just it made me think weird, kind of oddly, about it as a genre.
Okay.
Because I was like, oh, you know, like, I was looking up other things on this, like doing my research and stuff. There are other colony sims. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why would you choose one or the other? I watched a video of somebody who was like ranking 10 RimWorld likes, and they're like, this one's in the fine tier. And I was like, imagine playing, like, why would you just play a fine version of these? Why would somebody make just a fine version of one of these? Like, I don't know. It's confusing to me. It's interesting to be new to this.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is a game you manage a group of people that are colloquially known as pawns. And they're trying to survive stranded on a world on the edge of a sprawling galactic civilization. They've crash landed and they're from Firefly.
Yes, everything is Firefly. You say crash landed. There are multiple scenarios where you can kind of start. But kind of the basic one is you're a bunch of spacers who crash, and then you gotta, you know, Robinson Crusoe it for a little while until you can get off of the planet. There's like an end game for the base game, and then all the DLCs kind of add their own little victory quote unquote conditions for it.
Yes.
Yeah.
And we're just covering the base game. We're not doing any DLCs or mods. Mm-hmm. That's insane for people who like this game.
Yeah.
The base game is plenty in and of itself. The DLCs are really interesting, but they add mechanics that add a whole other like multiplying factor.
Yeah.
To this. It's like adding a new axis. Mm-hmm. To this. They look really cool. I looked into them. Eventually I'll play them for fun. Mm-hmm. But did not get to it in this session.
Yeah. Like if we decided, hey, we're doing RimWorld all DLCs.
Yes.
Like if you install Anomaly, you have a different game.
Yeah.
Like you can, you know, turn on modifiers and stuff to, you know, about like how present that is going to be. You don't have to activate the Anomaly stuff if you don't want to. But yeah, if we didn't activate it, we wouldn't be engaging with it. We would have just spent money on the DLC.
Yeah. It's a real like kind of buffet kind of thing. Like you take what you want.
Yes.
From this. And that's true even in the base game, but for everything you add to it, it even becomes more so.
Yeah. The mod situation for this is so funny because, like, I don't know, you're trying to do something or you can't figure out why people are dying or getting sick, and you go look up something and nobody can agree on what comes with the game. Like people will just say, oh, build this and you're fine. And like, this is, oh, it's like a little food cooler. Well, no, that's not in the base game.
The refrigerator's closet. Mod.
Yeah.
Requires. Yeah. You have to have a freezer.
Yeah. So like, yeah, people lose track of like what is common mods that are installed and, you know, which are not. And the mods are very transformative.
Yeah. Well, or just very ease of use, matter of fact, too. They have ones that like it's all the gamut and it just, it was built to take modding. We'll talk about that when we get to development. But that's by design.
Yes.
Like this is like what you need it to be once you get past, for me, once I got past that initial hump of... Like, we'll talk about that when we talk about the gameplay and stuff.
Yeah.
But, like, once you get to it, it is very versatile in a way that I can understand being really, really off-putting to somebody.
Yeah.
There are people, I understand, like, gamotypes, you know, I find out from just having a community for a long time, that do not like being able to change a game. Mm-hmm. Like, they want, you know, developer present a thing, I play the thing. If I like the thing, that's great. If I don't like the thing, I don't play the thing. I go on to something different. Like, that is a... uncommon, you know, not an uncommon and a perfectly cromulent mindset. This is the opposite of that. This is the anti that.
Yes.
Like you can obviously just play it that way, but even within just the base game, there's so much of, hey, customize this to what you want. It is really overwhelming and getting over that hump of like, it is not against the nature of the game to make it play how you want it to play.
Yeah.
Is a little bit of a hurdle. Mm-hmm. That is kind of unique to this type of game and isn't something you ordinarily have to deal with to this degree in other games, I feel like.
Yeah. And like a value neutral way, your relationship with this game is going to mirror your relationship with complexity, right?
Yeah. Yeah. In a lot of ways, like a very specific kind of complexity.
Yes.
Yeah. With this. Like, and, you know, in addition, just its versatility of not just complexity, but like, all kinds of video game vectors, like, you know, challenge, like how much do you want to be able to, do you have to start over?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you want fail states? You can make something very complicated but without fail states.
Yeah.
Which is really weird. But you can, like it exists within this.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I say complexity, I just mean like this is simulating a lot and then you can, you know, change what it is simulating, I guess. And like all of it kind of gets around to, you know, trying to find solutions to problems that are very well hidden just in the mechanism of the thing, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, we also, it's worth noting, like this, we talked about this being a forever game. People have this is a career making game. This is a cottage industry game.
Yeah.
There are people who stream this or do YouTubes of it, and that's their job.
Yeah.
Necessarily, we cannot be those people.
No. Yeah. I have more hours in this than Gary does, but like, I don't know. I've never really gotten to the end game. Like, I don't play this, you know, I optimize to my idea of optimization, but like you can go really deep on this and I just kind of haven't. I'm going to talk about stuff that is, you know, Baby Town Frolics. You know, this is a real mirror of the Last Spell episode.
a little bit
last
yeah.
week. Yeah. You know, so like we're going to be doing stuff and talking about things that are, you know, going to hobble you for endgame, right?
Yes. Yeah. We're going to make mistakes, especially, you know, in higher difficulties and such like that. Like from what I understand in reading about it, where I got was the early mid game.
Yeah.
In this, to put this in perspective, like I ended up putting 40 hours into this and then cutting myself off.
Yeah.
The standard for WoF games is 20.
Yeah.
I don't like to put more than 20 hours into a regular game unless we're doing multiple episodes on it.
Yeah.
Because during a week, you know, I know 20 hours of video games, it doesn't sound like work, like good work if you can get it. But during a week, we're doing lots of other stuff too.
Yeah.
We're recording, we're researching, we're doing a bunch of different shows. We have to do this stuff for that. Mm-hmm. But I ended up putting a lot of time into this because it was very compulsory and I still don't feel like I have a shadow of it.
Yeah.
You just like, you don't, it's hard to get there.
Yeah.
Non-derogatorily.
Yeah. This is a, you know, like this is like a depression hole game, like Gary kind of said.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, very akin to The Sims in a lot of ways, but like, you know, I have to manage my exposure to this because like the first day that I picked it up, like back when it was an alpha, it was just like, oh, that day's gone. Like, it just disappeared, and I'm like, I need to lock this away.
It's very compulsory.
Yeah.
You know? If that's what you need, if you need to take hours in front of you and put them behind you, like, it's hard to think of a better apparatus for that. That sounds like it's negative, but I don't mean it that way, because it's still fun and does cool stuff. It's a really great game. Like, I really love it. Mm-hmm. It's just a thing where it's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I'm glad this was not around. I'm glad that when I was having those kind of depressions generally, I mostly had things with endings.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd have a natural stopping point.
Mm-hmm.
This has literally no end.
Yeah.
Like, yes, you can get to an end game, but that doesn't mean anything because you can do it, try a different scenario or throw in a DLC or a mod or whatever.
Yeah.
This is literally just an, like, in terms of Desert Island games, like, this is like a new tier.
Yeah.
For that. Like, this is just for everything.
Uh-huh.
Got it. You know, it's a, let's get into development first. It's going to be kind of a weird episode, as you mentioned, because there's also the narrative arc of this game. We'll talk about the story making part of it and everything. The narrative arc of this and narrative of it is not huge.
Mm-hmm.
So this, we're going to be all over the place.
Yeah.
So thus is RimWorld.
Thus is. So this is the creation of a Canadian game developer named Tynan Sylvester, whose first job in the industry was working at Irrational Games early on in the BioShock Infinite development.
He's a special thanks in the credits. He left that project to make his own games and prototyped a bunch of different games before he found one that people couldn't stop playing. He had friends playtesting it, and they were falling asleep playing it. Not in a bad way. They were bored. Because they stayed up too late.
Yeah, it's like I'm gonna mix together a bunch of shit from my kitchen, you know, in the pantry and under the sink, and just, you know, feed it to my friends and see which one they can't stop eating.
Exactly, and it worked. Yeah, yep. they made French.
So this was announced alongside a Kickstarter campaign back in 2013. It is easy to forget that this is part of the Kickstarter boom. And the goal was to create like this sim-based story creator, inspired by Dwarf Fortress and Prison Architect, and also kind of the aesthetics of the show Firefly, kind of this space frontier kind of thing. Yeah.
Development staff is really small. A few other people are credited as being engineers on the game, but development is almost entirely driven by Tynan.
Yes.
There are some community volunteers. Eventually, he has also folded some mod content that modders have made into DLCs and stuff. And that was kind of the plan, not necessarily to fold it, but to make it extremely moddable.
Yes.
This is super mod.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the way it's put together is really funny because the game is kind of broken up into two parts. Like the logic of it is just like the program that's running, but like all of the mods stuff, you know, all those parameters and assets and everything are just an XML file. Like it's something you could open in Excel. Like it from the ground up, like architecturally, very moddable. You can lose yourself looking on the Steam Workshop. Some of them are really silly because it's like, you know, your guys won't go crazy if they don't eat off of a table, right?
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, all the way up to like total conversions. There are also ones that are not on Steam, the workshop, because they were banned. Rim Job World is a thing.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. The, can I digress really quickly?
You may.
A thought I had. you know how everything is phallic?
Yes.
Like how, and then whenever anything does something that a penis can do, it's an innuendo. So like, you can't say like he pierced him with a sword without it just being a dick. Mm-hmm. We chose one of the basic shapes. Or we didn't choose, but like the dick is just a line.
Uh-huh.
Like, of course it's that versatile.
Yeah.
Like, it can't be phallic when it's literally just a line.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's what it's like. There's lines, boxes, and squares, basically.
Yeah.
You know, like, or circles. Like, why, how can we make that one be so representative of a genitalia? There's so many things that are just basically a stick. It's real low-hanging fruit that we decided to make that a dick thing.
This is at least three full chapters in the Da Vinci Code.
I gotta write it. It's so, we set ourselves up for such a stupid softball. Like, as humanity and as people who like making double entendres, mm-hmm. I feel like we should have tried so much fucking harder than
that.
Yeah. You know, like it's so pathetic. Somebody would be like, oh, yeah, he stabbed him. And somebody would be like, yeah, he stabbed him with a dick. And I'm like, everything is shaped like that. Yeah. Like rakes are shaped like that. Pencils are shaped like that. Everything is because it's one of the basic shapes, not because like of anything Freudian.
I'm drinking.
Freud has so much to fucking answer for.
Like, oh, I mean, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm drinking a beverage with a straw right now. Yeah. I'm not sucking a dick.
Yeah, may as well be a dick. Like, it's all that stuff with Mac with the pen. You know, a carefully placed pen can do something to a person like that. Uh-huh. Like, of course it is. It's a pen because a staff or a wand is one of the basic fucking shapes. I was getting mad about it because I saw somebody online who was like, pointed to something and it was stick-shaped. Like, mm-hmm. it was a rod of some stripe, and they made, like, a phallic joke, but didn't otherwise look like a penis at all.
Uh-huh.
And it was like, this is so fucking lazy.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
And it's just, like, that person wasn't being lazy. We are all lazy to just accept that as part of our vocabulary.
Mm.
Like, you have to have, like, a head. It needs to have, like, a bulb at the end to be phallic.
Yeah.
That's my new thing. Sword is not phallic.
No.
It has to have a bulb at the end.
Spear.
Pretty phallic. Like, if it doesn't have a head or two balls, like a cherry, you know, with like a stem with like one of those double cherries at the end, phallic. But like just a cherry stem, not phallic.
Huh.
I'm drawing a fucking line in the sand.
Okay.
It has to resemble a dick in more ways than just one of the, it's not even a shape. It's the thing that requires to have two dimensions. Everything two dimensional is a dick. Is basically what it is. Everything's made of fucking lines.
I think you're just mad at very specific people online.
No. This is everybody. This is everything. Look at this lowercase L and the word development on this header. Like, I don't know. I'm just, and that has a little E and an O next to it. It kind of looks like a dick and balls. That works.
Yeah.
I'm asking us as a species to hold ourselves to a higher standard for this.
Okay.
I just need everyone to get on my fucking level.
I mean, I'll try. I mean, I don't think I generally do that unless I'm making fun of that thought process.
Yeah, generally, you know.
I don't feel like you're putting me on blast. Why am I getting defensive?
That's something between you and the therapist. I don't know. But like, it's just a thing I see everywhere.
Uh-huh.
It drives me nuts. Anyway.
Rim job world.
There are horny ones of these.
Yeah.
I guess the little guys kind of look like dicks. Yes, if they rimmed each other, that would do a mood booster and that'd be fun.
Yeah.
So mod development have been brought, or the other thing I was gonna say real quick is that one of the fun things about doing this show that I've learned, one of the best things you can do to future proof and just make your game really, really good and beloved is include robust mod support.
Absolutely.
Every time we cover a game where that happens, the game has a huge fucking following.
Yeah, it's got legs, right? Yeah, like,
it's got legs forever.
Mm-hmm.
It's such a good idea.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if it's possible, like, obviously not every game can do it, but like, if it's possible, I wish it was pursued with the same zeal that tacked on multiplayer modes were pursued with.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is going to work better than that. Eventually, someone can just mod multiplayer into it.
Mm-hmm. If they want to. Yeah.
Like they
if
did with this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wait. Oh, yeah. Have they modded multiplayer into this? Oh, weird. Huh.
Yeah. I don't know how it works, but I've seen multiplayer mods of it.
Yeah. No, I've never seen any of those. Yeah. That's been one of my biggest revelations over the 15 years of doing the show has been, you know, like I went from like, oh, mods are like a neat little curiosity, you know, like some of the games we got, you know, some games that we have started as mods or developers started as modders. And it's like, no, like this is deeply, I'm deeply philosophically aligned with this.
Yeah. Me too.
Yeah.
It's the end boss of like, it's your game. Do what you want with it.
Yeah.
Like as a perspective.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the Kickstarter funded very quickly. People saw this and were like, yeah, I want that. And it entered early access with an alpha at the end of 2013. And development kind of continued in the open until the 1.0 release in 2018.
It's worth noting this is one of those alphas that was basically the complete game. Like, yeah. It was a very robust experience, even as alpha.
Yeah, that was when I when it decided it was dangerous. It was during the alpha. Yeah. There was enough there.
This is a huge success. Mm-hmm. Reviewed really well. It is one of the most popular strategy games on Steam. And again, it is a cottage industry. It's got some Dark Souls to it. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit of controversy to acknowledge around the game and its development. Can you speak to that in like a one sentence thing? I would like to acknowledge the controversy, but I'm not super familiar with it. I know that like people got mad because men weren't bi. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. So just decisions made early on during the simulation of people's sexualities and then not handling the feedback to that well.
Yeah.
There are other things like given the subject matter of the game and the things you can do in it, people try to kind of like paint it as like a chud thing or whatever. Like this is one of those games, if you bring it up, like somebody is going to say like, you know, stuff against it. I have not seen a very coherent argument about why this is something that should be kind of like shoved to the side. But yeah, the big one is the sexuality thing, which eventually was fixed, right? Yeah. Eventually it was like, yeah, no, just this is
I remember dumb. Reading about that. I didn't realize if it was still a thing since it had been fixed. Mm-hmm. Like thinking about that, I had the thought of like, obviously it's on this dude to respond better when getting feedback. Nothing can simulate literally everything. Like you do have to make choices when you're making a game as to what you're going to simulate and how.
Yeah.
Like I wish that he responded better to doing it. I'm not mad at him for having an oversight.
Yeah.
You can't literally model everything in the world.
Yeah.
Like as a thing. And he also probably did not know this was going to break through, you know, and become as popular as it was to where it was going to get outside of like a niche zone.
Yeah.
I kind of get it. I'm glad he fixed it.
Yeah,
and he should have responded better when asked to fix it. But
absolutely. I'm not trying to minimize it. Part of my feeling about this, you know, once a game gets a controversy, even if it's kind of fixed, it kind of has that. What's the opposite of a halo, right? Yeah. You know, people are just like, oh yeah, I remember there was something off about that, and then just kind of write it off. Looking at the like the breadth of what is simulated here and the way that it's kind of tuned for like maximum chaos and drama, it is very hard to draw like a coherent viewpoint that this might reflect from it. Right.
I think so too. Like this did not feel like everything is political and everything has a political perspective.
Yeah.
When I read about that and those omissions, it did not feel like it had one.
Yeah.
To me, it did not feel like there was malice in this. It felt like somebody emulating a kind of genre piece. And there are assumptions baked into genres, and those are worth examining and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think that, like, it's not, to me, it's not a Vorpal flaw to have not done that, especially if you fix it.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. Like, it's things are living projects. Like, you released an alpha. I don't know. I remember that was the only thing I read. The reason why I asked, I wasn't trying to camp out on it. I do want to just acknowledge the controversy. I don't know if there was something else that I had missed because I didn't want to accidentally be like, oh, you know, this is fucking cool. He does this. And then have to put in a note where Gwen had to come in and be like, actually, you know, that was extremely racist. You know, whatever this tribe is actually a real tribe and he just used their likeness or something.
Yeah.
You know, something that was really intense and did not get walked back.
Yeah. That's kind of the scope of it.
Yeah.
You know, I can still like this game and admire it, even if it is not, you know, fully. Yeah.
Yeah. It's I don't need everything to be perfect.
Yeah. So there have been 5 DLC expansions for the game. We can talk about those vaguely when it seems appropriate. As we kind of said before, they're real cool.
Yeah. I want to fuck around with the ideology one.
Oh, yeah. Ideology is great. Biotech, like ideology and biotech, they give you so much like customization over stuff. Yeah.
So aesthetically, this game does not look like much.
No.
It's largely readable, like almost, you know, really, really good readability, which is all it really needs. I think it does a good job of that. Probably could be slightly better than that. Like some of the menu UI stuff is a little bit confusing.
Yeah.
And the tutorial is a little wanting, I think.
Yeah.
But I wanted to get the visuals out of the way and stuff to talk about the music, which is great.
Oh, the music is amazing.
Yeah, the music's incredible on this. Just really, really relaxing. Mm-hmm. It is part of an assault to put you into a fugue that just, like, you know, doesn't realize you're still playing this.
Sun's getting real low, buddy.
Yeah, it's doing that to you. It's like a weird, you know, hypnotization thing.
Yeah. But yeah, some really good, like acoustic guitar kind of stuff. Yeah.
It's Firefly.
Yeah, it's Firefly stuff.
It's cowboy stuff. Like, this is, when you say Firefly, we mean space that's so far out it becomes cowboy times.
Yeah.
that is like it is a genre. Uh-huh. Like, cowboy space. It's cowboy space.
Yeah, it's cowboy space. Yeah. We have entered cowboy space. Yeah. It's very modest aesthetically. I sometimes have trouble when, like during a melee fight. Like, everything just kind of overlaps. That overlap and trying to select the right thing ends up being a problem. But, like,
huge problem. Corpses. Yeah. Like, if you end up in having, like, a big assault or a bunch of animals or anything, they're all piled on top of each other. It's really easy to lose items.
Yeah.
In there.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't mind that they look like little Fisher Price flash assets.
No.
Yeah. No.
That's all it needs.
Mm-hmm. So we've talked a lot about the game so far. You know, we're about 25 mm-hmm. minutes in. What the fuck kind of game is this?
Yeah.
Right?
It's so earlier this week, we talked about this and I said, not really a game. And you had a very strong reaction. You're right to, because I misspoke.
Yeah.
What I was trying to get
I didn't scream. I was like, I disagree.
Yeah, it was a disgust reaction, which is good. Appropriate. You should be disgusted with me and hold me to a higher standard. No. All I want is for people to hold other people to higher standards, including myself.
Yeah. We weren't on mic. If we were on mic, yes. I would have ridden you harder.
Yeah. No, I got it was off mic. We're just talking about our days. Mm-hmm. And the, but what I was trying to get at in terms of what kind of game this is it is a game, but it is a ant farm in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. You manage indirectly.
Yes.
You view the game from top down. You can pause whenever you like and issue orders. You know, so it's kind of a real time with pause thing. And the game is dictated by this thing called a storyteller, in which you have difficulty levels and modifiers. Mm-hmm. And those can change lots of things, obviously, as modifier implies. And the thing is, you don't control what is happening directly generally.
Right.
You pick your guys, they have traits, you place orders on objects. This is the thing I think that is worst tutorialized in the game. And then you let it happen. This is the part that feels like an ant farm to me. Mm-hmm. You have to get used to this idea that one of your guys can be freaking out because they haven't had any recreation for a while.
Yeah.
You are not allowed to take that guy and say, hey, go do some recreation.
No.
Like, that just, it doesn't work. It adds an indirectness to it, almost like you're setting up gambits in Final Fantasy 12.
Yes.
For people, almost.
Yeah.
You are the architect of the general wants and priorities your world and base have, and you have little AIs enacting those, modified by their modifiers and their skills.
Yes.
And you kind of steward it.
Mm-hmm. And you do have a tremendous amount of control over this stuff. You can forbid, you know, people from doing things. You, like, if you're picking this up and playing it, like, and you open up the work tab, like, go in and set it to manual because you want to, like, really, really control, like, oh, this person who, you know, kind of can cook. I don't want to forbid them from cooking, but it can't be the first thing they do.
Yes. You set, like, priorities. Like, that's where, like, the kind of gambit feeling kind of comes in.
Yeah. So, like, if you're coming to this from a lot of other strategy games, or even like The Sims, you think, I'm going to select who I want to do an action, and then, you know, from like a little menu, like, direct them to go and do this. You kind of can do that. Like, you can tell them, hey, prioritize, you know, hauling this body.
For some things. There's certain activities that just you can't do that with.
Yeah.
And it feels kind of arbitrary at first.
Yeah.
And like, it felt like it to me. Mm-hmm. Instead of telling your guys what to do, you tell the world what you want to have happen, mm-hmm. and you tell your guys how important it should be to them, and then let them make the decision for the most part, including sometimes saying, hey, drop everything and do this.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It is an interesting amount of remove. One of the things about this game that I came to, though, as a revelation, is that realizing that was the case and that it was okay to just stop, like, let go for a while.
Yeah.
Like, it needs that autopilot so you can cruise for a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
in between moments of high intensity decisions, high intensity or high intention decision making. You have to have these moments where you're off. And that's what makes this such a time suck.
Yeah.
Is you listen to relaxing music and watch your little guy's farm for a little bit. It's like watching a fish tank. It's very relaxing. And then either something happens or it's you've got enough resources or whatever to go into a high intensity mode.
Yeah.
And you go back and forth. The experience of playing this is a really, really addictive mix of high and low intent play.
Yeah.
I found.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good way to put it. You know, like even if at low intensity, you know, like, yeah, there are times where it's just like, yeah, there's nothing I can do. I've, you know, issued the order for this little barracks to be built. Like, you know, I've done what I can and just let them go. But even like during those times where I'm like really, really hands off, what I'm doing is watching, right?
Yeah.
Like you can, you know, click on the portrait of your little dudes and then, like get a little line of what they're trying to do. And you can see, okay, well, this guy's not doing what I want him to do.
Yeah, check in on everybody, make sure they're doing what they should be doing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then like just kind of constantly optimize, right? There's a certain degree of this where like it's kind of like pruning a tree. You know, just as you're watching this stuff unfold. And so, you know, you're not directly, you know, sending people to do stuff, but you are kind of like, for me, kind of like constantly sculpting the rails that they're going to be going on.
Yeah.
And that to me is like the sweet spot for this.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that I was constantly doing it, but I also didn't go on to higher difficulties until kind of moving on to it. I started on a low difficulty because I needed to understand it. Big shout out to Worm Girl specifically, but several people who's like, you start on the easy mode. It's okay. Yeah. Like, and that goes against everything, you know, I do for the show. Like, I want to play a game as intended so I can talk about it as intended.
Yeah.
This game does not have an intent in that way.
Nope.
It has all intents. So, and they very specifically let you change that throughout the game. So if you're hearing this and you're intimidated by this type of game, like I was, this stressed me out a lot, even when nothing bad was happening initially.
Yeah.
Start on storyteller mode and then ramp up.
Yes.
It's okay for you to get your house in order first.
Yeah. We kind of alluded to this, like the storyteller kind of deal. Like there are three like personas for specifically how events are kind of laid out. Yeah. So like, and they have like cutesy names like Randy Random, Cassandra Classic, and Phoebe Chillax.
Yes.
And like they specifically govern like the time in between the events and what kinds of events they're going to be.
It's so you have those. And then even further, you have degrees of how tough the events will be. Even within those storytellers, you can decide. And it's, one of the things I really like about this in terms of how it communicates to the player is it's just very literal with these.
Yeah.
You'll look at it and it'll say events will, you know, you might have harsh events, but you're going to get a lot of time between them.
Yeah.
You know, and that could be the difficulty you want. Mm-hmm. Or you're going to have a lot of events. It'll be interesting, but they're going to be a little chiller.
Yeah.
You know, you want to constantly be doing things, but you don't want to constantly be on the edge of death.
Right.
You know, manage this to the degree that you want. Mm-hmm. And in a brilliant move, like I feel like too many games are like, once you've, you know, decided it, you can't change it. You can change it. As I was playing the game, I was, you know, I was playing on Chillax initially to do it. Once I had my base up, you know, I felt like I had an okay base. I had a couple extra colonists. I switched it over to Classic.
Yep.
But on lower difficulty. And then slowly raise the difficulty to where by the end of the game, I was playing, I had a huge advantage because I started on easy mode, but I was getting the pace of events and intensity of events that are the standard game mode.
Yes.
That was the correct difficulty option for me was not easy from the beginning, easy throughout. It was an arc or like a, you know, a little hill that I climbed. I just needed a little, some training wheels for a little bit.
Yeah.
This game is really savvy about giving you that option if you need it. And I did. And I think anybody who is going to come to this game, this type of game even, would benefit from that. I don't know if, so the game that I've spent the most time with that is like this is Project Zomboid.
Okay.
And it does not have that, at least at the time I played it.
Yeah. That game's been around for a long time. Like that was an inspiration for this as well.
Yeah. It's a cool game, but I was just too hard.
Mm-hmm.
You know, initially I could not learn it.
Yeah.
You know, so I tried really hard because it's my breadbasket. Like, I like that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it was, yeah, too difficult. This is really smart about doing that. I don't know if other games have started doing this, but yeah. I think it's the correct way to do it.
No, it's really good. You just have to be comfortable taking that kind of, I was going to say responsibility. Again, no moral valence to it, but it's like, oh, this is another thing for you to manage, right?
Well, and are you the type of gamer that does not have a philosophical opposition to making your own Sunday?
Yeah.
Like, that's a gamer type.
Mm-hmm. You know, and once you know the system's better, if you just roll up a new colony, like if you're playing this, you're going to be rolling up new colonies all the time. You know, like, okay, well, I can start a little bit faster. Like, I want my challenge to be, you know, like getting off the ground with a little bit of pressure, even though, like, over the course of a campaign, challenge of the events that come along is going to be dictated by the wealth of your colony.
Yes.
That is another kind of gate on this. Yeah. But your difficulty that you select will determine, like, the aggression of that scaling, right?
Yes. It is one of those things too where God, we're going to be all over the place in this, but
it's okay. It's fine. It's a weird episode.
It's a weird episode. One of the things is that I do think that some of that meta control stuff, like such managing wealth levels, is not something that is adequately presented in the game at all.
Yeah.
That's almost entirely something you have to learn about from, like, YouTubers and wikis.
Yeah.
And that does kind of suck to me. Mm-hmm. It's not the end of the world, you know, but it kind of bums me out that there is a meta for this in terms of playing it at high level. Like, if you do eventually want to get to high level, there's just a right way to do it.
Yeah.
And a lot of the right ways to do it are not something you're going to come to naturally.
No, you're not going to be going around and, like, watching every little bit of construction to see, like, oh, you made that dresser too nice.
Yeah, that's, like, too nice of a dresser.
Too nice of a dresser.
Yeah, we can't have that kind of dresser here. That's going to be bandit.
Yeah. Oh, no, the neighbor's going to come. They're gonna covet us.
Oh, they're going to covet the dresser. Watch out for covets. Like, yeah, nobody's going to do that. You know, or like, there's all kinds of weird little micro tricks about that in gaming the system that you come to from, like, a meta. And I guess that's just another way to play it. You know, for me, trying to play it naturally just with what the game teaches you and stuff, I'm just never going to do that. I'm never going to play it on ultra hard, where the idea of having a slightly better lamp is life and death for my colony.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, no. I'm just probably not going to get there. It's cool that I'm able to. It sucks that I have to pursue out meta knowledge.
Right. The annoying part is, like, if you look up, like, okay, why am I getting all of these difficult raids? Or if you look up anything about the game, like, the version that is presented is like, okay, here's optimally how to do it. As a community, we have, like, figured out this is the way that you need to lay out your bedrooms.
Yes.
Right. And that takes some of the expression out of it.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
That is shown in lieu of just kind of, like, explaining, all right, so here are the factors. Here are the factors that you need to consider. Yeah.
And there are things that just explain the factors. One of the things is knowing all of these factors, some of which are semi-invisible in the game, are going to lead you to those optimal strategies.
Yeah.
Like, I think it is weirdly a game that works best when you don't know everything about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you want to know some stuff about it, but knowing everything about it does feel like I would just do the same things everyone does. Like, I never want to read the word kill box again. In terms of, like, reading about high level play of this, I don't care about kill boxes. I will never make a kill box. I'm not going to. It's too artificial and weird. You know, it's just not it's not my fantasy for this. Like, yes, it will get me up to further difficulties.
Yeah.
I'd rather have my colony wiped.
Yeah.
So basically what you're trying to do is you build your colony. You're trying to keep your guys alive. You try to expand, you get more guys, you get a bigger zone, you manage your resources, and you get escalating crisis events, as we mentioned, that are dictated by those storytellers.
Yeah.
And this takes place over several years. You have four seasons in a year, and these seasons are also going to put pressure on your colony.
Yeah.
Different flora and fauna in each season. You have to survive the winter. That's kind of the first big challenge. That will pop up even on easy mode. Having food stores for the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then eventually you have to start surviving the summers.
Yes.
Yeah.
No. And this involves multiple factors. It's not just food and stuff, but it's also heating, shelter, things like that. Like, you know, clothing, having the correct clothing for stuff, things like that.
Yeah. Part of why, like, we're not going in and explaining, like, each of these systems, even though I've got, like, a section to generally talk about them, is, like, just so much stuff is simulated. right? Yeah. Like, it's not just a matter of survival. Everything is pinned to, like, the moods of your guys. And those are dictated by their health. They're dictated by the space. Like, everything is integrated with each other.
And their traits.
Yes.
Like, they even have things that they're going to want as they... And that's where a lot of the emergent storytelling is going to come from.
Yes. Yeah.
You have a tech tree. You have a research bench. You can, research is one of those things you can't make somebody do for some reason. Mm-hmm. They just do it if they're prioritized and there's nothing else better to do. Mm-hmm. But you can research things. This will start out slow, eventually it gets faster. And this is how you move up a tech tree from basically caveman times mm-hmm. to being able to build a spaceship to get off planet.
Yeah.
Being the end game of the base game.
Yes. Yeah. And how you accomplish these goals is really gonna be up to you. And part of the reason why this game is known is because of the memes about the war crimes and just crimes against humanity that you can commit if you want to.
This was a funny thing learning about this before playing it, mm-hmm. because I think the game is actually pretty savvy in a way similar to Frostpunk in yeah. terms of making these kind of points. Like, I played on, you know, eventually on normal mode, but you know, there are people who call me a baby for this. But one of the things I was noticing, similar to Frostpunk, the kind of political, one of the things that game is saying mm-hmm. thematically that I think this game also says is there's a reason why evil is done, and that's because it's easy.
Yes.
I wanted a slave during this.
All right, gonna clip that.
Yeah, it would have been super useful. Uh-huh. I took somebody, you know, we're going to send me back to health. They wanted to be free, and I didn't let them free because I need another colonist. So yeah. It's like something I actually did.
I'm going to brainwash you. Yeah.
Yeah, I brainwashed somebody. I brainwashed actually lots of people.
Uh-huh. I mean, that is one of my complaints about this, is that's like the main way. Yeah.
You should be able to do other things. There should be other ways to interact with people who visit you
yeah.
and stuff. But I did a lot of things that I thought were pretty shitty. Mm-hmm. You know, during this, because of survival, that is a thing that is unique to games, like a message that they can send because you actually have to do it.
Yeah.
What's frustrating when I was reading about it, though, is that people are just gleeful about it in yeah. like a sim torturing way that, like, then I have to remember, like, oh yeah, I also tortured Sims. Like,
yeah,
it's possible these people are young who are just like real into making people sit on furniture made of their loved ones.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of funny that you can do that in the game, but the headier, more higher minded extension of that to me is that the game will sometimes make you need or really want that.
Yeah.
Another example is the tribe that, like, my primary colony, all of my dead colonies were at the beginning, and my colony that I currently have is still going. Mm-hmm. And their strongest ally are slavers.
Mm-hmm.
Not into that. Don't love that they're slavers. Almost bought a slave, decided not to, but also decided, no, these guys are my friends. I need them.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot make enemies with these people.
Yeah.
I don't like that they're slavers, but I can't do it. Like, we won't survive without caravans from time to time mm-hmm. for these people at this point. So, like, in making me make that decision, I think was really meaningful.
Yeah.
In a way only games can do. In a way that, like, oh, you get to, you know, turn people into nutrient paste and then feed them to the relatives is not meaningful.
Yeah.
You know, if you have to do that, that can be. Mm-hmm. I ended up having to make some stuff out of human leather. That wasn't great. Didn't love that. You know, we had to do it, though. Uh-huh. And, like, that was cool. Having to do it and my characters not liking it and me not liking it, but having to do it survive is unique to games. It is a unique game nutrient.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, like, you know, discourse flattens and memes flatten. You know, and that can be frustrating if you're trying to engage with it, because, like, people will talk about, like, oh, you get ideology and, you know, you can, you know, make, you know, cannibal drug addicts, you know, marauding in Mad Max armor. And it's like, well, you can also, like, make a, you know, like a collectivist utopia if you want to.
Yeah. One of the things about this game that I was really enjoying was making, like, a pretty chill functional society.
Yeah.
Like, yes, everyone is constantly doing labor in a way mm-hmm. that I don't like for, like, 16 hours a day.
Yeah.
That I wouldn't like in real life. But everyone, you know, at the time more or less liked each other. Mm-hmm. They'd hung out, you know, spent some time cloud watching and stuff. It seemed nice. Like, making a little world that seems nice from scratch was also really satisfying to me, not just making the Raider DLC, the Nuka-Cola DLC or whatever.
Yeah. So, like, that is a patina over, like, all of this, you know? But, like, it's deeper than that, I think.
You don't have to engage with that. It's not the game is not doing it. It's not hatred.
Yeah.
You know, it's not made for that. It mm-hmm. allows for it, but it's part of the cost of allowing for many things.
Yes. Yeah. So like, let's start talking about some systems and like the problems that you need to solve. I thought about like titling all of these, all of these little subheaders here, like things that can kill you, because like that is what you're trying to avoid. Like everything here has a danger that can not just hobble your growth, but leave you unprepared for emergencies that pop up.
Yeah.
And the game is presenting you with a lot of choices. That are connected to a bunch of other things. So like you may think, all right, I just pick a spot for my colony at the beginning of the of the game. Well, that choice really, really matters because you're kind of picking what kind of game you're going to be playing.
Yes. And the tutorial does do a good job of this.
Yeah.
You know, so you're choosing a terrain and basically this is going to choose what kind of soil you have, you know, what kind of flora and fauna are going to be about. You want distance to roads or water. Rivers are really good to be next to because of power generation. Roads you travel really fast on, very good. No. You don't want to be really close to a hostile settlement, no. even though everyone starts a little hostile. The actual reputation system, this is fucking bonkers. You start at negative 80 and it's actually not too bad. For some reason. I don't know why they did it that way. But the as you're picking hexes on a globe, this is yet another granular difficulty thing.
You can pick the Arctic. You can, you know, go into a toxic zone. You can go into a desert if you want to.
You can be in a mountain. You can be in a jungle. You're going to deal with disease, things like that. You have different, it pre-generates a bunch of factions on the planet, which you'll have relationships with. Some are always hostile. They're raider factions. And then there are some that will start at neutral, aka negative 80, relatively hostile, but not necessarily trying to kill you. And then you can eventually make them friends. And people who are, you want to be close to somebody who is at least semi-neutral to you, because that's how you're going to get caravans. Either sending or receiving, which is a really big deal, especially in the early game.
Caravans, you know, you're like, there is money in this, like silver acts as a medium for trade. Caravans, like they come through in different types, and getting the right caravan at the right time, can make a huge difference, right?
For me, especially early game. Like when I did not know how to wring every resource out of my biome and there were just bottlenecks.
You know, like, you know, early on, if you get a caravan that, you know, has chickens, like, oh, well, I'm set for life.
Chickens are great. Like you want those chickens. A riding animal is really good. For me, you know, sprinkling in little, like, as we get through these things, they'll kill you. I'm going to sprinkle in like little story bits. You know, that happen because like, that and I don't have great stories from this game. I didn't play it for that long or for that much difficulty. But like one of the things early on was cloth was a huge bottleneck. For me, I grew a cotton field, but I grew too late because I was concentrating on food and I had a cold snap that killed my cotton. So it sent me back a year. So cotton, you know, material, this is why I ended up making human leather clothing because I needed warm clothing. Great little, you know, emergent gameplay moment. But getting caravans that sold cloth was huge. Needed cloth so badly. And so if I hadn't set up close enough to a neutral faction, this wouldn't have happened in time. So like that was a thing where my difficulty choice, my choice of starting made a big difference to this.
So you select where you're going to be, and then you have to pick your survivors. By default, you have three that you can take. And it generates a bigger number of pawns for you to grab.
It's so weird. There's three and then there's four in reserve and you can also randomize any of them, basically making it unlimited in reserve. So I don't know what that four in reserve is for.
For the longest time, I thought those were like people who were like with your party who could randomly show up because occasionally like I, you know, for my colony here that I play for this, like I ended up having to deal with a very serious negative moodlet because during a raid, I was not aware that one of the raiders is one of my pawn's daughters.
Something kind of similar happened to me. Like it was very early. I don't know. One of my pawn's daughters crashed and I missed that piece of information. I didn't make it to her before I survived. And because that guy was my workman, he was a night owl. So I had him doing all of the like, you know, chopping trees and shit at night. He was happy to do it. But I had him haul her corpse and he had a, like a negative moodlet for like two seasons.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for a very, very long time of mm-hmm. being sad that he saw his daughter's corpse, daughter died, dragged daughter to, you know, the garbage bin.
Exposed a daughter, rotting daughter.
Rotting daughter.
Yeah. Daughter in river.
Yeah. It was just like a whole, all of that stuff. And it's, I didn't really realize what had happened.
Yeah.
With that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a very, very similar kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not those people, because those people will show up kind of regardless. I don't know why you get the bonus people in the whole thing when you can just randomize them, but basically you get this kind of mix of traits, background, stats, and passions. And this is one of these things where everything is more or less viable and you want some bad stuff to make it interesting.
Yeah.
And then there's also the meta of community things where there are things you just can't have.
Yeah.
You know, it's a meme in the community or whatever, but you can't have pyromaniacs.
Nope.
It's no good. You don't want anybody incapable of doing dumb labor.
Yeah.
That's going to bottleneck you really badly. You mm-hmm. want psychopaths.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. But things are mildly, like, again, I had that night owl and mm-hmm. his socialization stuff was difficult.
Yeah.
But it was
not
really nice to
crossover.
Have some, not a lot of crossover, but it was nice to have somebody who could do stuff at night while everyone was sleeping.
Yeah. And you can make that crossover. You can designate like recreation time that overlaps. Like you have very granular control over their hour by hour schedules as well. When you get a night owl, you have to go in and change their schedule because otherwise they're just going to work with everybody else and they're going to be fucking miserable.
And they're miserable sleeping.
Yeah.
Yeah. Passions are really interesting. Like you have a skill amount, which is really important. There are minimums. Some skills doesn't matter. Like who cares if you mine very slowly?
Yeah.
You know, it sucks, but you'd rather mine fast, but it doesn't hurt you. But you don't want somebody who can't cook making food because it can give everybody food poisoning.
Yeah.
But passions are almost more important.
Yeah.
Passions are crazy important in this. You know, characters have a skill amount and then they have the amount they're passionate about doing it.
Yeah.
How much they like it.
So like when you're looking at the list of skills in their bio, some of them will have like little flame icons next to mm-hmm. them. Like one flame is regular passion. Two flames is like they're crazy passionate about it. This governs how happy they are doing the work, but also how fast that skill grows.
Yes. And skill growth is really huge. Like it is, there are things that are very slow to grow, I found. So having good passions for the thing that you want your character to do is very important.
Yeah. And when you're generating your party, you want these to be pretty well-rounded. And it'll show you like your overall colony stats as well,
yes.
kind of like down toward the bottom. So you can see if you have any holes in here.
You're going to have some. It's worth noting there are more skills, more things you're going to want to do than can be covered by your pawns.
Mm-hmm.
Like again, you know, I mentioned earlier, I didn't have anyone who's good at mining.
Yeah.
You know, but that again was part of the story generation. Like when a quest came up later to rescue somebody mm-hmm. who was good at mining, I was like, yeah, no, I need that miner.
Yeah. Really
like
badly.
I will go risk some things. I will go storm mm-hmm. this compound because I need a miner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And having somebody who is like mediocre at stuff, like you don't want them in your first crew, but like later on, if you know, you get somebody, you know, people will joke like, oh, they're a hat. Right. I need to, you know, like at the very least, I can use them by using their leather to make a hat. Well, no, somebody who's not skilled, like you need people to clean. You need people to haul.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Haul and clean, number one.
Yeah.
And having a full-time maid, there are worse things to do.
Yes.
I'm sure, you know, and that's one of those things where like, if you've played this for billions of hours, that might not be optimal. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, the amount they use in food doesn't make up for it or whatever. Yeah. At reasonable person difficulties, it's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I would say.
Yeah.
They have these things called mood breaks and mood frenzies. They have a mood meter. This is very granular. You can click on them and see what's making them happy or sad mm-hmm. at the time. They are fussy little bees. there is a lot of, you know, we talked about earlier, like eat without table.
Uh-huh.
Sure, that's not great.
Yeah.
But like we've sat cross-legged and eaten at a family picnic at some point.
Uh-huh.
It's not worth like pouting out all day.
the eat without a table thing is very specifically a meme in this because when you have a break, it will list like the last straw, like what actually mm-hmm. did it. And it kind of doesn't matter. It's not listing the big one, it's listing whatever caused it.
Yeah.
So like it could just be like, you know, jealous of so and so's bedroom. And that's why you're going around lighting things on fire.
Yeah. Jealous of bedroom was so frustrating.
Yeah.
I put so many fucking statues in it. What more do you want? So they have these little things, you know, and the game will be really good about warning, you know, minor break risk, major break risk and stuff. Yeah. You can manage these unless they are something that is something you can't directly make somebody do. If you need to address this. Usually, in my experience on the difficulties I played, these were most easily managed by clearing prioritized work. They were freaking out because I had set them to do something that had no end, and they need to go to sleep or eat.
Yeah.
For the most part.
Yeah. Frenzies are good. Like, so break's bad, frenzies good. Frenzies are like inspiration sometimes. Like, they'll be like, the next thing that you make is going to be quality levels higher. The next person you try and persuade to join the colony is just going to work.
Instantly work. Yeah. And these will last for a few days. And because these are, though, having the opportunity to use them is subject to random chance as well.
Yes.
You know, so you might not get a chance to use them.
So like maxing out your moods is important because the frenzies are going to happen more often. The inspirations are going to come more often.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're feeding these people, you're entertaining them, you're resting them, you're making them comfortable. You want them to be in an area they like. They like to live in a spacious, rich, beautiful space. The degree to which they want a spacious place is crazy.
Yeah.
Realizing like how huge these people needed their rooms.
Yeah.
You know, eventually it was very absurd. And they'll have relationships with each other. One of my guys, the first person I took into my colony, the person I took prisoner and converted, kept hitting on one of my ladies and kept getting rejected.
Yeah.
Put him in a bad mood for a really long time. This is something you have what feels like no control over other than their exposure to each other. Like you can make them not see each other by sleeping, you know, and not lining up their rec time, but characters are just going to hit on each other and like each other or not.
Yeah. Yeah. No, the colony that I did for the show was just Fleetwood Mac. they were getting married, breaking up. All of this.
I didn't have anybody get together until the very end of like my playtime.
Oh.
With it. Yeah. My characters were not very interested in that. They had their eyes on the prize. Yeah. Eventually two characters became lovers and I had done the thing that's degenerate gamer stuff where I just named them what they do. So everyone was like Doc Shootly, Plants Buildly, you know, and it was like, you know, Doc Shootly and Veterinarian Cooksley. And I was like, who the fuck are these guys? And they're like, they would benefit from having a double bed. And I'm like, I don't remember which one is in what room. I never had enough cloth to carpet code the rooms the way I wanted to.
I also do I give them the nickname that corresponds to what they are. It's real like, it's real Logan's Run shit.
You almost have to.
You're setting their work priorities and really watching and making sure that they have the stuff available to them. You know, like if you're not paying attention, you might not notice like, oh, this person doesn't have a bed. And that is really kind of creating drag. Like you're just solving micro problems with them.
It'll warn you about the stuff like that too.
Yeah.
To the degree. And as you play and iterate, you'll get better at heading off those problems. Like,
yes.
Eventually, I got to the point I'd have somebody in prison. I knew I was converting them. So I'd build them a bedroom so they could hit the ground running.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice little welcome home planet. Like, oh, it has the standard statue and potted plant package that I do for all bedrooms.
We have a warehouse full of art we can bring you. Yeah. Yeah. We can talk about health and injuries and stuff when we talk about healing, because that is very put through here. But yeah, you're dealing with their social needs, and you can even see their thoughts, so you can like get ahead of them as well. Also, in a dwarf fortress like fashion, you can see like a list of events that they've gone through as well.
And these will be, you have to opt into these, and these are sometimes superfluous and fluffy. Yeah. Like characters will say something to each other, they'll talk about something specific, and it doesn't tell you that unless you go into this little log. You know, depending on how invested you want to be in the role-playing aspect of this or how invested you want to be in their lives, you can do that.
The descriptions of the art are so funny because it looks like a little like Dead Space marker or whatever.
Yes.
And then you'll go in and read it and it's just like just this just magisterial description of like the moment that it captured.
I love when pawns were admiring art and you just have this little guy just like staring directly at this little pile of garbage that I made. You look at the time that passes, it's like an hour and a half.
Just staring directly into the eyes of a wooden chicken.
Yeah, exactly. I didn't find any books until really late. So like nobody did anything for a very long time until I could have a TV. It's like, oh yeah, just horseshoes again, huh? Okay.
Yeah.
So you're building a colony. is what you're doing. You start off, you know, you're going to be really small in this. You're going to have like a bunker. Lots of people are going to share a room. You have to do that to get shelter initially. And you're going to crash with a lot of like meals that will never go bad.
Yeah.
They're important for this. Mm-hmm. But eventually you're going to start making a building, making mm-hmm. a base, or, you know, a series of buildings or some outbuildings or whatever. Almost everything is walls and a floor mm-hmm. Through this. Like, you can do a couple of outdoor structures, but everything is a room. There are no windows. Nope. And you're building out for different things. Like, you're creating different zones to plant in, different zones to dump and stockpile things in, indoor or outdoor. You're basically designating what area and then building walls around it. And the game will smartly say what kind of room something is based on what's in it.
Yes. So this will be a workshop. This will be a lab. This will be a hospital. It just kind of knows. Yeah. What it's going to be.
You can kind of double up some things, but not all things.
Yeah, like your hospital and your lab can be the same for a little bit.
Yeah.
You're also dealing with storage, right? Mm-hmm. Everything in this game is logistics. And, you know, one of the keys to success is like knowing where to put your stockpiles, building your shelves if you need to, and then setting different storage priorities so that, like, okay, I'm building stuff over here. Well, I need people to haul wood here so that we can reduce the footpath to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found the management of storage a little bit clunky in this.
Yeah.
Figuring out, you know, eventually, you know, building a freezer, mm-hmm. a walk-in freezer, and then having, you know, just going through and setting everything up to just have the meat and meals go in there.
Yeah.
Without having already done it in advance was a huge pain in the ass.
Yeah.
For all my shelves that already existed. Mm-hmm. I wish that there was a more global way to control that. I'm sure that's modded.
Yeah.
But I do not like the interface for that very much.
Yeah. But you have to pay a lot of mind to your layout, because even though you can deconstruct things to get your resources back,
some of your resources back,
and also things can be botched in the building and the taking down, depending on the construction skill. A terrible thing to have happen when you're trying to build sterile tiles.
Yeah. Yeah. Because you use money for those.
Yeah. But the time. So there's time, and then there's like, well, this space can't be used if I'm like trying to transition it. So, like, you know, you want to be pretty sure about where you put your bedrooms, because you don't want to have to build like a temporary set of bedrooms for people if you need to move that. Yeah.
Well, there's also a lot of like juggling. Like, I am going to replace the walls in this bedroom, mm-hmm. Or I'm going to put in an air conditioner into this room, for example. Mm-hmm. They're going to tear down the wall first. Make sure you have all the components to build the air conditioner so you don't just have an open spot in your wall until you can build that. Mm-hmm. You might not be able to do that.
Yeah.
Eventually, I did have a very satisfying base evolution where I had my old shitty base, which I didn't know what I was doing, and then built a nice base. Mm-hmm. Where I landed had tons of marble. So I built a marble house as a thing. And I this is before I found out about wealth levels and also wasn't playing on high enough difficulty to care too much about it.
Solid gold mansion closer, and rocket
Lenny.
Car.
Yeah. Yeah. It was very look closer, Lenny, for this. But my guys were unhappy about where they were. And I had little cramped rooms. So I was like, okay, I'm going to build an addendum and then turn all of the old stuff into workshops and research rooms, all the old bedrooms. And it worked out really great. It was really mm-hmm. satisfying to, over the course of a year, do a project of like having the new school and the old school and then transitioning everybody over one room at a time.
Yeah. We talk about like, oh, you can build things in, in marble. Like, you do select your materials. Mm-hmm. This is very important for fire. And also for temperature management as well.
Yes.
Like, you know, your first structures are probably going to be built out of wood, but you do not want to place a lot of investment in wood, because that wood can be used in better ways, you know, making biofuel and stuff like that if you need it. But wood structures are going to burn down. They will be struck by lightning. Eventually, raiders are going to show up with flamethrowers. And mm-hmm. once a fire gets out of control, you're fucking done.
Yeah. You're going to need to in the early game.
Yeah.
Like, you have to. Like, it's not like playing this game, hey, don't use wood. You have to. You just have to know that it's going to evolve eventually.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to want to start, you want to build a stone cutting table and start making some blocks. But that is labor intensive.
And early on, you have a labor shortage. You have three people.
Yeah.
Which is going to force you to brainwashing or slavery. Mm-hmm. Like, it, again, neat. Like, mm-hmm. what it makes you want the things and makes you make the moral compromises.
Yeah.
As a thing. As you mentioned, fire is a really big deal. You don't want anyone who won't put out fires, who starts mm-hmm. fires. Characters can put out fires fairly quickly if they're small.
Yeah.
I never had my have a base burn down I had him set on fire, but I was able to get him under control.
Yeah,
there.
And eventually, eventually you can build like extinguishers.
Yeah.
As well. You want to do that if you can.
I had the handheld extinguishers.
Yeah.
Little bombs you can set off. Mm-hmm. You're gonna have to feed these people. This involves agriculture and hunting, because you have survival meals, but they will run out.
Yeah.
This happens two ways. You can grow crops. You do this by laying out zones.
Yeah.
Crops have different times to grow, different times to be planted and such. And they're going to have their own downsides. So I got hit by blight a couple times. I got hit by several cold snaps. Crops were probably the biggest vector by which disasters happened to me in this. But this will fuck up your shit. Through here. And then there's animals. Animals you can tame or hunt. Mm-hmm. Animals, they have a chance to fight back if they're hunted or tamed. Mm-hmm. I think that if you're just choosing a easy zone, you're going to have some enemies or some animals that are just willing to be shot.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of an easy mode thing. But these will eventually trade out.
Yeah.
I had like a bunch of ibexes and muffaloes, and then at some point rhinos started.
Yep.
I just had like wall-to-wall rhinos, and I was like, fuck, man. You stay over there, I stay over here. Like, I'm not going to fuck with you. Like,
we got an uneasy detente going on here.
So many rhinos. It was
between us and the rhino kingdom.
Crossed the over the hill and the town was taken over by rhinos. Like, literally so many fucking rhinos.
Yeah.
At some point.
Animals can become a huge problem.
Yeah.
And like, this is modeling like over hunting, you're gonna run out of stock, but like if you go and watch the animals interact, you're going to see like, okay, well, you have predators, and predators are going to start killing and eating the smaller ones. You can hunt your squirrels. You don't want to hunt your squirrels, because if they run out of animals to eat, they will come for you. Something that happened more than I would like to admit is, grizzly bear got into the base. This is an emergency. And a grizzly bear will fuck you up.
The grizzly bear. So like, starting grizzly bears, my colony started with a pet. I don't know if they all do, but you can have a pet in this, and a turtle. His name is Donatello. Mm-hmm. And the grizzly bear came and killed Donatello. Everybody was sad. I didn't like it, but it happened. A new turtle tamed itself. Animals will sometimes just be like, it tamed itself. It likes you. Uh-huh. And you just get those animals. That's not a real thing, but it happens in the game. Mm-hmm. So I had Raphael, my second turtle, and I didn't know about frostbite.
Uh-huh.
I didn't realize that I could send, I didn't think of a barn. I just didn't consider a barn.
Yeah.
So, the pen is for animals. I was like, fuck, I'm not letting him die. A bear came after him. I fought him off. Then he had frostbite, and I saved his life, and he was resting, and I hovered over this fucking turtle. And it was like a cracked shell, badly, broken head, bear bite, broken leg, bear bite, broken tail, bear bite, broken ribs, bear bite, broken lungs, bear bite. And it just kept going. And then I was like, oh shit, I got to euthanize this turtle. Like, I saved him and he can crawl his way back, but he doesn't want to live.
No, there's nothing left of him.
There's nothing. Yeah. It was so, so dead. So eventually I just got a little squirrel pet named Moose, and he was great.
I named him Michelangelo.
I had so many pets. Anytime something domesticated itself, I was like, oh, join the party, guys. So I ended up having tons of pets, and they had like pigs, and they bred like crazy. Mm-hmm. They're really cute. They make little piglets. They're very sweet.
Yeah. That is one of the things. Like, you have to keep your animals fed as well. And you can like grow a big, a big patch of hay grass, right? Mm-hmm. And they'll just graze off of that. That's not there at winter. You do end up having to manage your animal populations. Like, you can sterilize them if you want, you can butcher them, but we talked about getting those chickens. Chickens make eggs, and that can go into any meal. It's like a perpetual food machine. They will get out of hand, and eventually they will start starving, and they're going to get sick.
Yep, and you need to not have a bunch of roosters so you don't have fertilized eggs.
Yes.
Because then you just have a bunch of chicks. I'm like, okay.
You need to have one very lucky rooster.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pretty complicated. It's pretty fun. This part I like a lot. Hunting, kind of moves into the combat stuff. I always babysat hunting in case someone fought back as a thing. The food and cooking is really important. You want to have a decent enough cook. do this, so you're not giving everyone food poisoning. I definitely made that mistake at one point. My cook was sick. Somebody else, my backup cook, gave her own food poisoning. You want to process meat and stuff, and there are different levels of meal. This leveled up infuriatingly slowly for me. I got into out of simple meals like at the very end of my 40 hours, and this character cooked constantly. I do not know why this was leveling up so slowly. I could only basically make simple meals and pemmican the entire time. It was Townsend hours.
You also want to keep your kitchen clean. Like this will like food poisoning can be really bad. I've had pawns die of food poisoning before. And anytime somebody's put in the penalty box, you're losing out on labor. So you want people to, you know, to be up. Something that I do not like is that you cannot prioritize, at least in the base game, you cannot prioritize cleaning zones. So like, you just have to like pick somebody and then direct them, hey, clean this kitchen. It can't just be like, hey, I have a roaming cleaner, which
you can have a roaming cleaner, but just can't make them prioritize the kitchen.
So just like they're out there, you know, sweeping my warehouse, and it's like there are bigger concerns.
If you kind of put everybody to low priority clean, I found this mostly took care of itself, but I did have to manually tell people to clean the kitchen. And hospital were the two from time to time. The food will go bad. You want to find a way to store it. You want to get a freezer of some stripe. Eventually you can cook pemmican, which lasts for a very long time. It's not exciting. Special word about nutrient paste. You start with you can research the ability to make this stuff. Nobody likes it, but it's really versatile. It's not a bad idea on higher difficulties, is my understanding. Like people don't like it, but it's really good as a backup because it's very easy to make.
If you're taking a lot of prisoners, nutrient paste is going to be good. Specifically because of the way that their moods work. The negative hit for that is outweighed by the positive of just being able to kind of throw anything in there.
And it's just one of those sacrifices you have to make at some point. And eventually you can make really nice meals to boost your mood. I never got there.
That's just about variety of ingredients, right?
Like simple
meals is just one. Also your skill. But just like you want, you know, if you're directing fine meals, like, okay, well, it has to have meat and vegetables, it has to have multiple different kinds of different kinds of ingredients.
Macronutrients.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of crafting that goes in this. There's tons of things you're gonna make. In this, like weapons, armor, just apparel, clothing, things to have around, in addition to furniture, different materials to make furniture and walls and such like that. Things you're going to break down to make better food. You're going to make drugs and medicine, things like that. These all have little individual doodad stations. For them, basically. So like if you want to smelt something, it's different than machining it, which is different than stone cutting it. You're basically going to have like a big workshop or several small workshops that have stations. It's very Venture Brothers special feature.
what is your strategy on this? I always go smaller workshops with like basically I make a mall is what I make.
First time, because I had my first base where I was still learning it, like the old base, and then I eventually moved into the new base. In the old base, I had one big workshop. And then once everybody moved to the new base, since I had all those extra rooms of their bedrooms, I specialized it more. And a lot of things also having like, for the beginning of this, I did not have a standing hospital or a prison. I kind of made those as I needed them. Eventually I had a standing hospital and prison out of old bedrooms and stuff. But eventually this ended up being two rooms. For this, instead of a bunch of little rooms, it was one for clothing, one for basically stone stuff, and one for clothing and medicine.
That's a good way to do it. And this goes into base building. You want to decide what's going to be next to what. And you want your raw materials for a particular station stored near that station. And then also like a way, because of the way shelves work, a way to have like dedicated shelves so you can see like what your stock is, right?
There's nothing wrong with putting your stock, like all of your stone stuff, dedicating that, making that shelf only for stone stuff. Putting it in your stonework room as a thing. You can make a wide variety of things, and these move up a tech tree. So eventually you can start getting, crazy things. A lot of these things are also strictly detrimental. In the drug section, like you can build hard drugs, and your characters might be interested in those, but eventually they can go into wild drug fugues, or OD, things like that. I think it's cool that the game allows you to build a lot of things for which, other than the kind of resale value, there's not a lot of clear advantage for. You can set a drug policy for your crew, you know, one drink a day, does drugs socially, things like that. But you, it can get out of hand if you forget to click something like that.
A lot of drug manufacturing is, like, is very early on in the tech tree. It can be a way to make a lot of cash, but you have to manage the effects of that, being very strict. And some people, if they have particular traits, they're going to ignore your drug policy. They're going to get in there. I have lost a colony to the devil marijuana. Well, because smoke leaf is so like it's easy to grow a lot of it.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
You
don't want to get addicted. It's not addictive.
You don't want nothing to do with this.
Kind of wants to do with that.
Well, you can just make and carry a ton of joints. They're light. But if you don't manage, they're just like, they're a very easy mood boost, but people can get addicted to these versions of it. And that mood boost gives way to withdrawals. Withdrawals can kill.
I very often administer them to patients in the hospital, like administer a joint.
Yeah.
I don't know. Chill out. There's be a wielding number of things to make. You're also going to find things. As well, both on your map and through raids or through exploring the rest of the map, things like that. There will be bottlenecks on these kind of things. I never got to make a furnace because I could not get enough graphite for the life of me. I think it was graphite. But there's something I needed for the furnace, for the crematorium, rather. And I wanted that to destroy clothes people had died in.
Because that's modeled. Clothes can be tainted.
Things can have a bad vibe. Like, do you I wear stuff from thrift stores. Do I somehow under the illusion that people have not died in my clothing? No. These, again, guys, you need to chill out. Random events will happen to you. These are the things primarily you are choosing the intensity and frequency of with those difficulty options. And these can be a lot of things. I have not played with a Randy random run. I want to try that where it is just what kind of event you get is random. So you might get, you know, oh shit, like guys in power armor storm my base. That seems funny to me. That did not happen to me. In this, obviously.
Just like, I get like seven bad events in a row, or I get seven good ones, and you know, I have bumper crops and all of that.
These are psychic soothe.
The psychic stuff is interesting to manage, and there's more of that in royalty. Is what it is. These can really fuck you up, especially the bad ones. So many Manhunter packs.
And these are great because they're like shitty animals. Like, you'll get a Manhunter pack of squirrels and just like a bunch of rabid squirrels, and it'll be like, it'll clear in a couple days. And there's, you know, again, very fun little story thing where it's like, fuck it, they're squirrels, I'm not gonna wait a couple days and stay inside. You send somebody out and they kill the squirrels, but they get fucked up.
Them's as piranhas, my friend.
They're just like really tough and small and stuff, and then eventually it's like, okay, I have to like leave these things into my base defenses. There are a couple of different big threats in this, or three big threats in this. Raiders, which are always a constantly hostile faction. This kind of plays in that wealth level we talked about. The wealthier your colony is, the more of an attractive target it is for these guys. The other things are mechanoids and insects. Insects are big mutant insects. Mechanoids are robots. The most harrowing event that happened to me was a defoliation wave ship landed with mechanoids, and the mechanoids were really fucking hard. Above my weight class. So really, really, the closest I came to a wipe with my current going colony. They survived, but a lot of people in the hospital and stuff. And that was cool. It's fucking ruled. Like, a ship crashed that was going to destroy all plant life on my zone. Couldn't have that. Had to take a big risk to fight them off and barely made it. Like, that's gaming, baby. You know, that's drama.
That is drama. Mechanoid visits are a big deal. They will crash, and they're really gonna mess you up. And they're very durable, right?
Yes.
And like, they carry more shit than raiders tend to earlier on, in terms of and you know, in terms of weapons. Eventually you're going to get raiders with like flamethrowers, grenade launchers, and mortars. Oh god, mortars, Gary.
Yeah. I never quite got there. I had raiders with machine guns. Mm-hmm. Basically was where I topped out.
Yeah.
Of that, but again, I didn't spend that long in the breadbasket of difficulty.
Yeah. You know, so like those are hostile things that are going to come get you, but also like temperature is going to kill you. Like that is the most common killer that you will experience and also read about. Heat waves are no joke.
Yep. Waves of disease, things like that.
Yeah.
And then we mentioned positive ones. You know, it can happen. The psychic soothe is very funny to me. Like everyone who's a guy is in a good mood for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
You know, like, oh, there's a new Jackass movie coming out. Wave is spreading across the planet. Something like that. But yeah, these are just, you know, community chest.
Yes. Stuff.
Yeah. Some of these you're gonna have to fight off, so you need to have defenses. You need to fight. You have ranged and melee combat for your characters that they can do. You can have turrets you can make. You can build traps for things. You can eventually build mortars yourself and stuff. I never did this. The way you're supposed to do it is to make kill boxes, which are like little like tower defense.
Yeah.
Mazes or hallways in which your characters have cover and you funnel your enemy into a zone.
Yeah, you're manipulating their AI. You present a vulnerability that they're going to go toward. And they're kind of just going to
a really nice jade statue of a chicken, and they're gonna go for that, but they don't know about all the traps.
No, it's just like, man, I can't break through this wall. I've got to go for the opening, regardless of the guns.
Yeah, the danger.
A lot of the development, a lot of the changes have been specifically made to invalidate the kill box.
Yes,
it is not nearly as viable now, specifically because of mortars,
sappers.
Sappers who are going to go for your walls.
Yep, and that's a good thing. They need to replace it with something else.
Yeah,
right. Like, you know, I think that there could stand to be better defensive options in this.
Yeah.
I never did the kill box because it felt too gamey.
Yeah.
To me, my favorite thing, you know, I said it had a set of turrets around everything. I loved, so the every map starts with a piece of old technology, like an old building in it. And when you get close to it, your characters literally get like the heebie-jeebies.
Yeah.
It says you got a bad feeling about that. and I started mining into it, and I was very lucky because I mined into a corner so I could see into it, but not free everything inside it. And I saw there were a bunch of big evil bugs.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. So I was able to prepare. So I set up a bunch of traps and like a sandbag wall and turrets outside of them. So when the bugs would come out, I could fight them and they still fucked me up pretty good.
Oh,
but like I still, you know, was able to fight them off as a thing. It's really neat if you know in advance.
Yeah.
How to use these things. I do not like a kill box. Do like the idea of being able to find a place naturally.
Yes.
To heavily defend.
Yeah. Especially if you have time to repair. When raids come, like sometimes they attack immediately, but a lot of times they're going to kind of like, you know, put together a plan. They're just standing at the edge of the map for a little bit before they decide to start. You do have, in those instances, time to, you know, to prepare, to marshal.
It's worth noting, you can also, there's a mechanic called drafting a pawn, which makes them stop doing all their dailies and allows you to directly control them for combat purposes.
Yeah. And you're doing a lot of like RTS micromanagement, kind of control on them. Like, you're, you know, trying to like shoot them from around corners. You're trying to, you know, kite them essentially. Yeah. There are all kinds of like little strategies that you
retreat
can
when they're wounded.
Into. Yeah.
You know, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is going to cause injuries. People are going to need to be, healed. And, this, you know, involves like people with doctor skills. And you know, they're going to go and do bed rest and they're going to need medicine. And somebody to come feed them if it's especially bad.
Yep. Very hard to get people to stay in bed rest when I wanted them to, even though if I set them to it through this. You want to have a good doctor through this. Infections can, or not infections, diseases can spread as well. This is part of the reason why you want a clean hospital. Through this. And you can give people operations. This can be something like install, you know, deploying a joint at them or giving them a peg leg, things like that. One of the things you can do as a degenerate in this is just take off everyone's legs of every prisoner. Mm-hmm. You haven't just harvest all their organs to power level your medical skill.
Yeah.
As a thing. You know, again, the thing I think is cool if the game, if you need to do that, because otherwise you won't survive. Less cool if it's a thing you can do to optimize and be kind of shitty.
Yeah, yeah. You know? Like, there are all kinds of things you can do. Like, if you look up about, like, okay, I'm like, how do I build a prison? Like, you know, just trying to see what's necessary for a prison to run. And people will say, all right, first thing you got to do, you got to cut off their legs.
Yeah.
The second thing you got to do, you got to force as much smoke leaf on them as possible. Yeah,
misery, like, first.
Yeah, or, you need to keep them immobile and high so they don't try to break out.
Yeah. was not an operative factor when I was playing, and I'm glad it wasn't. I did not have to be that cruel.
Yeah, it's icky. But like every little attack, you know, like different parts of a person can be scratched. You can get lacerations, you can get bruises, and like knock-on conditions come, especially like blood loss, right? Yes. So you want that stuff to be tended, so that they do not continue to lose blood.
You can do the ultimate challenge of working on yourself, self-treatment of this. It's verboten. By default, which is weird to me.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I have three people. One of them is the doctor.
Yeah.
I think it's okay if he bandages up himself. But I guess it's somewhat less effective. So I think that's probably why it's forbidden at first.
Yeah. Old injuries are going to stick around.
Yes.
Scars can ache or itch, and that has like a negative mood effect. And also as they get older, if they cross a certain age threshold, every year they're going to get a new condition.
Yeah.
It's like, happy birthday. Enjoy your cataracts.
Yeah. You get Alzheimer's, shit like that.
Yeah.
A big deal for this.
Yeah.
It's also, the flip side of that, of installing prosthetics, is you can fix something that's like an old injury.
Yeah.
Which is really nice. Like, somebody can be missing a leg, you know, when they join your crew. And eventually you can get a doctor good enough to give them a peg leg. And then eventually a doctor good enough to give them a prosthetic leg.
Yeah.
Cool little story.
Yes.
When you have prisoners, one of the things is it's kind of limited the degree to which you can socially interact in this game. I think the social systems are probably the least developed.
Yeah.
By quite a bit. One of the main things you can do to people is imprison them. Mm-hmm. If somebody's visiting, if you want to do anything with them, if they're not a traitor, you have to imprison them.
Yeah.
You capture them, you put them in jail. You have a chance of success at doing this. Mm-hmm. And ironically, you want a better prison for them if you're looking to persuade them to join you. If you want them to not escape, you want a worse prison.
Yeah.
Something that hurts them. Mm-hmm. You know, like we mentioned, talking about giving them pot all the time.
Yeah.
And persuasion works. You set somebody as warden and they spend a little bit of time every day talking to the person. A little bubble comes up that says bed. Which are like, would you like to live in a bed?
Yeah.
We offer that, our tribe, until eventually it works.
Yeah.
You can also let them go, and that can give you a boost with whatever tribe that they're from, whatever faction they're from. So like, if you got attacked by a non-raider group, like a different faction, if you capture one of those people, nurse them to health and let them go and treat them well, they're less likely to attack you in the future.
It's pretty substantial.
Yes.
You can sell them into slavery to get a little silver boost if you want to. I pretty much go as long as I can without making like a dedicated prison, because you want people on your team. So like, I would keep them prisoned by like designating a bedroom, like an empty bedroom. Okay. This bed is for prisoners. They're kept here. They're constrained, but I try and keep it nice.
Yeah.
And it's just same.
I was desperate for hands.
Yeah.
You know, and that's not a morally good thing to do. Like, holding somebody against their will until they join you sucks. But again, I like that video games, when they make me do something that makes me queasy.
Yeah.
Like, that feels great.
It's the main way you grow your colony. So I found. Otherwise, you're counting on positive events. Like, hey, somebody shows up. Or you are relying on quests that will reward you with somebody.
Then those are cool too. Like, those are great, but it's also, or somebody also, if somebody lands and they are hurt, they have a chance of joining you.
Yeah.
And that could be a thing. One of the, fun moral event horizons I had was somebody landed, they were hurt. They just wanted to go off on their own. And I didn't let them.
Yeah.
Like, that's a really fun, dark gaming moment.
Yeah.
Like, oh, you're all healed. You start walking off. I'm like, not so fast. You're going from this bad bed to this bad bed. Sorry.
Yeah.
I got to work on you a bit.
And that can be a little bit counterintuitive, because like, oh, I want to, have them join. You have to imprison them. They have to be prisoners.
They have a chance to join if they landed, kind of regardless. They might just decide to join up. But if they don't, you have to go. You have to go to the stick.
But I really prefer the carrot. I really want them to join.
Yeah. Sometimes you need the stick.
Yep. Yeah. If you're going to want to improve your technology, and that involves like dedicating somebody to research, like intellectual pawns are very valuable. Mm-hmm. Not just because they can tend to be good artisans, because you all kind of always want somebody filling up that meter. You select your projects based on how you want to grow, and like you progress up kind of like levels. You can research one level above where you are, like if you're just at industrial and you want some spacer tech, but that comes with penalties to the speed. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's a wide swath of these. It looks like a very limited tech tree at first, mm-hmm. but it continues going. Like it keeps going to the right. Power is going to be a big bit of this. Early on, you're going to have wood powered stuff. And eventually, depending on your biome, you're going to have other options for this. You know, for me, next was solar, and then came a water wheel. Mm-hmm. And eventually, I ended up using the geothermal.
Yeah.
Power for this. And you're going to have like a grid. You're going to have to build a little wiring and stuff. And you're going to have to deal with, brownouts or EMPs. And you're going to have batteries. So you have power backed up. Batteries can explode.
Yep. Batteries can explode. There can be short circuits on them.
Yes.
You could get one of the deadliest events, negative events, zits, that you get any zits.
Yeah, I got a zit. It only caused a small fire, which was good. Uh-huh. Burned up, but it did burn up the guy who, his bedroom, where he was really jealous of other people's bedroom.
Uh-huh.
So I feel like that was kind of a karma thing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You know, be grateful for what you have, you little shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'll send you back to being a raider.
I can take everything away. You live or die at my pleasure.
Yeah, listen, Doc's Petley, the animal handling doctor.
Yeah. This is also how you get like better weapons, you know?
Yes.
Like, you know, once you get gas operated guns, you know, and suddenly have sniper rifles, assault rifles, you know, things that are really effective. You can make like role playing choices too. It's like, no, my guys are going to be medieval. Like they're not going to rise above medieval. I'm going to keep them there.
Yeah. And it's viable. Yeah. At least for a time. You eventually will get raided. Out of your house at home. But like, and also one of the things I was curious about, maybe you know this having put more hours into this, do other factions advance?
You know, they don't. And that I don't believe that they do. The relationships with other factions that's actually like a problem for me.
Yeah, we'll get into that when we get to caravans and trades.
Yeah,
but them not advancing was an issue thing for me too.
Yeah, I think it is more governed by, like the raiders that show up, that is strictly just by your wealth.
Yes.
Eventually they're going to start showing up with, better weapons to kind of take you down.
Because you have a jade chicken.
Yes.
You know how to use it.
But also like research and technology is about getting resources. You're going to run out of mineral, mineral mines. Mm-hmm. Are veins that are easy to get at on your map. And you're either going to start trading for those or you need to start doing like deep drilling.
Yes.
In order to get that.
You can also ameliorate downsides to this. You can use, there's a moisture, what do they call these moisture things? They allow you to kind of regulate the earth, make the ground equal in terms of moisture pumps to make it so you can grow crops the same way.
Yeah.
Grow different crops. I never got to bionics. Mm-hmm. With bionics?
Oh, just bionics are, so like prosthetics will, just take away like little issues.
Yeah, I got that.
Like your, a new spine, you get rid of your bad back through that. Bionics are like enhancements. So like you start getting like, I get to install better eyes. Think like cyberware.
Okay.
And those have some downsides as well. Like, they're susceptible to EMPs and stuff. And then the expansions, like specifically royalty and biotech, you get into like really weird stuff where you're like doing psychic implants and things like that.
Nice. Yeah. The game will generate quests for you. These are limited time objectives. So this can be, peace talks. This can be, there's a cache of treasure somewhere not far from you. This can be somebody's prisoner. This is why I went and did the jail escape to get my miner through this. These involve leaving your main zone. Usually in doing a caravan, through that. So this kind of bleeds into the next point.
Yeah.
The caravan system, I think, is pretty poorly conveyed.
Nobody likes it.
Nobody likes it. It's cool that you can do it.
Yeah.
I like the idea of doing these excursions. So either for like a quest or to visit other traders, you know, to send trade caravans to give a gift mm-hmm. to another faction, or just to go to another zone and see what's there.
Yeah.
I ended up doing a decent amount of that in my hunt for graphite, just mm-hmm. send somebody like 0.1 day away just to see if there are any old ruins there. And it worked out. Like there were some ruins. I just didn't get quite enough.
Yeah.
To interface with these other people, caravans are a huge deal. It is very hard for your characters to be in a good mood when they're mm-hmm. on a caravan. They're uncomfortable through this. They take a long time, especially if you're not on roads or don't have any riding animals.
Yeah.
The caravan interface will always tell you you don't have enough food. Mm-hmm. You can be going 0.3 days away and back, and it'll say caravan only has food for 3 days and will get hungry very quickly. Do you want to proceed? And it's like, no, that's lots of days for, you know, literally they're going across the street.
Uh-huh.
Like, what are you talking about? Like, this is the same as me walking downtown or something.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have a lot you can do. This is primarily to trade.
Yeah.
I like the trade system. I like mm-hmm. trading. I like being able to, these people had cloth. I don't have a whole lot of cloth, but I am fucking drowning in marble.
Yeah.
Let's trade them some marble. That was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
I liked going to a place on the map, and then when you leave it and go back, it just gives you a list of everything that's on that map, and you can say, yeah, I want to load it all up.
Yeah.
It's a real quick way to get a lot of resources at once
mm-hmm.
For things. There's not a whole lot of talking.
No.
There's no social system in this.
Yeah, what I want is diplomacy, and
same.
Like the there's like a shape of that in
the
some
royalty
of the quests.
One. Yeah, and you eventually can get aid where you can call an aid
yeah.
for people, or people will kind of give you aid automatically. Like you're mm-hmm. being raided, if you have a good enough relationship, people will send some people to defend you. But I wanted to be able to have like pacts.
Yeah, I wanted to be able to expand my influence. Like I wanted to like be able to jump around. And you know, this is my colony. It's going to run itself. But like, you know, over here, like I want to be able to specialize. Like this is especially good for growing crops. Well, this is my breadbasket, right?
Yeah. You want to have you want to have the bullet farm and gas town. You mm-hmm. you want to do that. And eventually you can set it to have multiple colonies or mods for that and such. I think it's available in one of the expansions as well. Mm-hmm. It was grayed out, which makes me think it comes with the game in some stripe. Might have to turn it on. But within that, I just needed stuff. You know, this is probably the biggest letdown to the game to me. And it's one of the things that earlier I was like, why would you play one of these types of games or another? This is a reason I could see mm-hmm. Playing another game over this one. Like having that would be really useful.
Yeah.
Most of the games that I have played, so I played a little bit of Prison Architect and a little bit more of Project Zomboid. Both of those were smaller scale than this. So they did not have social systems like that. I would like that.
Yeah,
I want a little bit of Starflight. In this.
Precisely. That's almost exactly what I want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is my posture towards this race. This race likes this sort of thing.
Yeah.
That would have been really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I need to look and see if there are mods on that. Because that would, you know, could
it'd
basically
be a big mod. Well, and also the most recent expansion for this came out last year.
Yeah.
Like if the guy wanted to add that to it, it would be a great way to do a full expansion.
Yes.
Like that is the axis on which I think this game can grow the most.
Yeah. Rimworld influence or something like that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, there's a little bit of that with the DLCs, but not as much as I want.
Yeah.
It also feels fairly arbitrary what people will buy and sell.
Yeah.
So like my last like thing that I would consider a story, and again, people have really great stories of this,
mm-hmm.
but Thrumbo, which one, every time those popped up, I was thinking of it as the DVD Trumbo showing up. As I don't know, Trumbo's here. Trumbo showing up.
That's my life as a 28-year-old in Chicago.
Exactly.
But,
we watched Trumbo a couple times. Yeah. It was actually kind of cool. But if Trumbo showed up, the game warns you. It says these things are really dangerous, but their horns and fur and everything are really valuable.
Uh-huh.
And it's like, okay, like I'm going to save and see if I can kill one of these things. That's one of the difficulty things, how often you can save. Mm-hmm. And I managed to kill it by kiting around a turret. I killed it. So I had this Trumbo horn, and I was pretty destitute. My entire time, I never got rich in silver in this. I never had enough trade caravans, and everything was too far away from me to send my own with any frequency.
Mm-hmm.
So I was poor all the time. I ended up building a communications console at one point and could not afford to call anybody for a trade caravan.
Nope.
Very frustrating. But I got this horn, I got all this fur, I got really valuable shit. Mm-hmm. I want to sell it. as a thing. So I, and this is my own fault, you can check this in advance, but the tooltip had led me to believe everybody wants this thing.
Yeah.
I sent a caravan to a far off town that was highly advanced and they didn't want it. And it's like, they bought all my other stuff. It was still kind of worthwhile, but like it sucked.
Yeah.
As a thing. Like I'd done some degenerate gamer shit in order to get this rare item and it wasn't useful.
Yeah. And that is another thing that bumps up against the lack of a social system is the lack of arbitrage, right?
Yes.
Like what I want to do is like, you know, because I'm a baby, I will start in like a fertile small hills kind of area. But like I want to grow a shitload of corn and then like send a caravan into the desert to a place there and like just make a fucking fortune because I have brought them magical.
Yeah.
Magical golden kernels.
An interesting game for us to cover at some point on WoF would be Starflight 2.
Yeah.
Starflight 2 is all about trade routes.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, the first one, Diplomacy and Exploration, but they made a game that's basically just trade.
Oh, yeah. No, I love that shit.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's trade with the social system from Starflight in it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can kind of, you do have relationships. It's still, you know, it's primitive. It's an old game.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's real neat.
This is something that is like addressed, you know, another reason you would get some of these other ones, Endzone ends up being like really big into like trade arbitrage kind of stuff, trade routes, setting up your markets and things like that. That is also like a colony builder. It's like after nuclear war is what that is.
Yeah, I would also, in addition to wanting the trade route thing, I also want like just social alliances that extend beyond, like I should be able to like do an exchange program.
Yeah.
You know, send one of my pawns who will live there and get skills and have one of them come live on the farm for a little bit. Things like that. Like, there's just a lot of headroom here.
I need to, like, as far as I can tell, you can't, like, wipe out a faction. But, like, what I want to do is, like, ally with the sensible people around me to take out the raiders who are constantly coming after me. Like, they have a settlement there. We need to wipe it out.
I think you can wipe out a faction. I remember reading a thing that can pop up.
Yeah.
So I think you can completely wipe out a faction. It's difficult because they're all over the map, but I think you can.
Yeah.
And that's basically RimWorld. It gives you a quest to build a ship eventually. Mm-hmm. If you do this, you have to defend it for 15 straight days while power's up. That's really hard. It's very wealthy. It's a big jade ship. And the people, they're going to want to take it. But that's kind of the end challenge. If you want to see end credits in this game, which feels parallel to the point. Like, I don't think that this game requires an ending or to see end credits.
Absolutely not. I've never seen it in the time that I've played it.
I'm not that interested in pursuing it. Like, I felt like when I play this more, which eventually I will, I need to keep it away from myself because of, you know, it's a depression game that takes hours in front of you and puts them behind you without your knowing it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to explore breadth and depth of it. Not going to try to get an ending. I'm going to try to engage with different systems, try different openings, different challenge modes, do different like self-imposed challenges for this. Like I'm going to try to do this, I'm going to try to do a mountain base.
Yeah.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Like that has its own challenges, right? Like you know, if you're under a mountain tile, like you get infestations, but you can turn that into a positive because you take the bugs. And you can use the protein, right?
Yeah, insect meat.
Yeah. Just like everything is kind of accounted for in this. Of the end games, Anomaly is one of the more interesting ones just because like that is all about like doing dark research things. Like it gets really bizarre. But like the ideology end game is really interesting because you are kind of trying to chase the godlike AI that is on here. And part of that process is like you get a colony to a certain point and you talk to an AI and you basically sell it and then take your colonists to a new place and start a new one. And you just kind of keep doing that over and over again, trying to get closer to where the AI is. So like it's about like prestiging a colony instead of just leaving it.
Yeah. Neat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And like, again, this will be, you know, I'm not necessarily taking the place of my standard depression game, but this is in the roster as a thing. And depression game is not, negative.
Yeah. It's not derogatory. Yeah.
It's but non-derogatory.
Have to understand its role in your life as an attractive nuisance, right?
Yeah. That's kind of how I think about it. Like it is too easy to play.
Yeah.
the journey of getting there was really fun for me because this was so stressful until it became not like the opposite of stress for me. I don't take naturally to these kind of things.
Yeah.
It is not inherently appealing to me just to make logistical like lines of things. Like, yeah. Even going through the notes and talking to you about this, like, I paid less attention to that stuff.
Yeah.
I did it, but I was not, it's not what jazzes me doing the pruning. Mm-hmm. You were talking about it. What jazzes me was making a cool little thing and having like a cool little town and then mm-hmm. having shit fuck up that made interesting stories for it.
Yeah.
You know, and without killing me.
Mm-hmm.
And I like, my favorite thing, the nice thing I can say about this game, my favorite thing about this game is that it contains it without condescension.
Yes.
That is an easier mode, mm-hmm. but this game is one of the least condescending games in terms of allowing you to play a difficulty that feels correct for you
yeah.
and acknowledging the subjectivity of that generally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Agreed.
I felt respected by it. Like, mm-hmm. even when I was playing on, you know, baby mode.
Yeah.
Respected by it in terms of the gameplay and then also all the verbiage around it.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of a chicken hat kind of thing. It doesn't do that.
It provides just everything and lets you make it the game you want to be and still have it feel meaningful, right?
Yes.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't just joking about the... about the, you know, oh, we got one, right? I was actually, you know, really happy that you saw.
A little surprised. You know, yeah. I was surprised. It took a bit. Like, sincerely, like, took a while because, like, initially, I had this very strong, like, I feel bad playing this.
Mm-hmm.
I feel too stressed. Like, things are going bad. I'm fucking up.
Yeah.
And I think there are things that the game can do better.
Mm-hmm.
To communicate, you know, it does it a lot to communicate, like, that easy mode and stuff is fine, but I didn't need outside, you know, validation of that
mm-hmm.
from people who had played it a lot. And I think I basically needed that because of gamer culture, not because of this game.
Yeah.
Like, it was more of a what did they do to us thing than something I can lay on the foot of RimWorld.
Yeah.
Like, there are things I do think should be tutorialized a lot better. We mm-hmm. didn't get into that too much, but the order system is counterintuitive.
Yeah.
To me, the fact that you don't have people do things, you have the object that you have the workbench do it,
mm-hmm.
and then people just do it when it's on their priority.
Yeah.
It makes sense, but it doesn't, it takes a minute.
Yeah.
You know, things like that, feeling lost and that kind of stuff is really overwhelming and a bad feeling for me. Mm-hmm. So I was happy to get into it.
Yeah.
And like kind of get it as a thing.
Yeah. This is not a game I ever would have brought to the show. For as much as I love it, right? You know, we joke about like, oh, this game would kill so and so, but like, I didn't want to force you to engage with it because, like, you know, I remember early on, like, I was on an episode of Comrade about Prison Architect,
yes,
and you had, you know, said things there that made me just really believe, like, yeah, this is just not going to be the kind of game for you. You know, we talked about like city. Generally, it comes up with like city builders and stuff, and so I just kind of, you know, let it be set aside. And when like some and when Colin came to us to executive produce this, it was like, I'll find somebody else to, you know, to bring in. And we ultimately decided, no, you're going to take a shot at it. So like, to find out that you were not miserable the whole time is nice, but also like that we can have like a genuine conversation about like, what's cool about this.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, we can have a genuine conversation about what's cool about something without me being a grump about it.
I know. Yeah. But yeah, no, I'm happy that there wasn't that friction.
Well, and like, you know, something like a Prison Architect, the interesting thing about this too, I think one of the reasons that makes this a good version of this for intros is it's kind of blank slate theming. Like, yes, you're doing spacer shit,
mm-hmm.
but because it contains all of those levels of technology and stuff, like Prison Architect is trying to tell a point about prisons,
mm-hmm.
But you are a prison architect.
Yeah.
Making it. You have to participate in the carceral state. Mm-hmm. I'm not morally condemning you for it. I do morally condemnable things in video games all the time. I love doing it.
Yeah.
But that's a moral condemnable thing that feels bad to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Project Zomboid, on the other hand, feels cool to me. I like the idea of being a survival after, you know, after a zombie apocalypse. You know, I like dead state shit.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a thing where it only contains that. So you start it, you die from the thing, you start over in another town, you're doing the same thing.
Yeah.
As this felt like it had a greater possibility space to me from the get-go, mm-hmm. which allowed me to kind of like vibrate into my niche with it.
Yeah.
You know, I had to kind of like, you know, do a lot of micro adjustments that this allowed for.
Yeah.
The other games of the genre have not.
Yeah. And that's the trick, is that this just allows for so much that it can be the, yeah, like I said, I'm just repeating myself on this. But yeah, no, this is a game that I adore, and I'm, you know, another thing I'm happy that you saw about it is like the stuff that comes to the show that I end up really liking the most. And I'll talk about this, you know, generally when it shows up. I think like Hitman, think Teardown, Think, you know, a lot of immersive sim kind of things. But like, to me, one of the best things a video game can do is allow you to, you know, make a very thorough plan that mm-hmm. then is going to have to meet the chaos that comes from a simulation that has things that you cannot account for in the plan, yeah. right? And then you have to kind of scramble, adapt, and improvise. That can be funny. That can be challenging. Like, that is, you know... I think the crux on which my appreciation for like a mechanically driven game, you know, is going to be determined, right? And this is another one of those that, you know, where that aspect really sings.
It's interesting to think about that in terms of gamer type as well. Because mm-hmm. Like I have a lot of that as well. It typically yeah. doesn't go in for city builder management stuff as much as ImSim stuff, yeah. but I love making a having a plan going off the rails. Mm-hmm. That destroys some folk.
Yeah.
Like, there's no judgment in this, but for some people, that's just not what they come to games for mm-hmm. as a thing. There's also degrees of sensitivity to it. Like, yeah. I've heard people talk in that way about, like, a Dark Souls or yeah. an Elden Ring. Like, oh, I have a plan for this fight, and it goes, I have to improvise. And that just hasn't been my experience usually.
Same, yeah.
You know, in those games, like, I don't know if I just don't have that degree of sensitivity to it, or if the idea of a strategy in a action battler feels mm-hmm. the same, if it's just, like, too quick.
Yeah.
For that. Like it's just really interesting how, mm-hmm. how it comes down. It's interesting what we'll take.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of properties or qualities that are transferable that I can point to in a lot of different pieces of media, mm-hmm. But their individual articulation is so fine that like it grabs you or it don't.
Yeah.
Or repulses you or it doesn't. Mm-hmm. You know, as a thing.
So, yeah.
Yeah, good game.
Good game.
Looking forward to playing it some more. I am so happy that I'm not interested in playing on Steam Deck. Because it would be a dangerous thing for bed.
Yep.
I have to monitor my. I had to stop. Yep. So I was like, got to play Rage.
Yeah.
Calling it 40 hours. My little town's in a good place. Mm-hmm. Let's chill.
Yeah. It was everything I could do not yeah. to just roll up and all expansions play and yeah. fucking get to work. So
yeah, I really want to try the expansions. I think I want to try them one at a time so I can focus on them.
Yeah, that's probably the way to go about it. Yeah. And if you have all the expansions, like if you get them on a sale or whatever, you can activate or deactivate them as yeah. you wish. Yeah.
Thanks again. Yeah. Colin, we appreciate you. If you are listening to this and you have a project or product you'd like us to shout out and you're any kind of disadvantaged person, please send me an email at gary@duckfeed.tv. We'd be happy to do so. And this episode, we want to give a shout out to, you know, Blue Sky Mutual to both of us, mm-hmm. Juno, yeah. Who does JunoRileyJournalism.com. Mm-hmm. She makes like articles on different things. They are good.
Yes.
I have read them before. Mm-hmm. You know, these are cultural, mm-hmm. you know, uppercase C and lowercase C. Mm-hmm. There's a really good, you know, nice piece on Silent Hill 2. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first thing that I had read that she had done was a thing on My Bloody Valentine's Loveless, an album yeah. I really like.
Yep.
Really, really good. Check her out. Yeah. That is at JunoRileyJournalism.com.
Yeah.
Yeah. So support. Her.
Yeah, huge recommends.
Yeah. Yeah, huge recommendation. What else can they do?
You can write in with thoughts. We want to hear your RimWorld stories and things like that. To do that, you go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in. The deadline is the 15th of every month, so you have a little bit of time. You've got like a day to write in when this comes around. But yeah, if you have thoughts about The Last Spell, RimWorld, or Rage, which is our premium episode for this month, go to duckfeed.tv/contact and write in. Separate multiple, if you have multiple games to talk about, separate those into multiple responses, and we prefer them to be specific and concise.
Yeah. June 15th is the deadline for June, and those games are Arcade Trip Reports. I'm going to challenge everybody for that, because we're going to go there, we're going to go to the arcade, we're going to talk about games. I want to hear about either your pet favorite. So I don't want to hear a story about playing X-Men with your friends. Yeah. We all did that. Either the weirdest or like the arcade game that you think nobody else gives a shit about.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to be on the lookout for when you do this for mm-hmm. me personally. Or if you have thoughts about Loop Hero or Baby Steps, That is June 15th. Rage and Baby Steps are the premium episodes, which means everybody gets the generalities. Patrons get the whole thing. Mm-hmm. You can become a patron at patreon.com/duckfeedtv at the duck level. We really recommend it. It keeps our lights on. So of course you'd recommend it, but we also think is a really good value. You get all the back episodes, you get a bunch of bonus shows, you get so much shit.
Yeah.
$7 a month. It is a good bargain.
We agree. Yeah. I was about to say, we agree.
We do.
Yeah. If you can't do that, leave a rating or review, leave a comment, subscribe to us on your directory of choice. Talk about us on social media. Well, we have a Reddit, have a Discord. All of that is welcome.
Yeah. The people have been nice on the Reddit. I know Reddit sucks, but everyone on the Reddit has been cool, been good conversations going on there. We appreciate that. You can also join us and thank our producer, Gwen.
Thank you so much, Gwen.
Yeah. And until next time, what should they watch out for?
Until next time, I would say watch out for tables.